Hello, creative people. Welcome to Creative Conversations. My name is Hollis Citron, and we are so happy that you have chosen to spend this hour with us. So a little background, I am owner and founder of I Am Creative and Express Yourself Publishing, and I am on a mission to expand the definition of creativity beyond a pencil and a paintbrush and to empower people, especially adults, to own their voice and talents that come in so many different forms. So this space was created to talk with people with all different kinds of jobs, hobbies, and interests, and to have conversations about experiences and perspectives, all centered around three questions. One, how do you define creativity? Two, how do you incorporate it into your life? And three, why do you think that it's important? And then we have a free-flowing conversation and we see where it goes. So I have had the opportunity to talk with so many different people. Musicians, Reiki masters, mediums, doctor, lawyer, physicist, biologist, real estate agents, and so many more. And these conversations explore the reality that creativity is not cute, it is necessary. People have defined creativity as their soul's essence, courage, imagination, basically all that we are and want to be. So I believe that sharing these stories expands one's thinking and opens up self-expression to feel more empowered, connected, and dare I say, happy. So my inspiring guest for today is Trish Bishop. Trish is the author of The Question Journey. She's a shaman, intuitive, empath, and certified angel guide. She, as a highly successful IT project manager, Trish was diagnosed with scleroderma in 1998 and was told she had 7 years to live. After refusing all medications, this resulted in Trish making some radical changes in her life, including diet, exercise, and a host of spiritual discoveries. Trish, welcome to the space.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
I can. Hey, Trish.
Hi, so excited to be here. Yay!
Thank you. So excited to have you here. So after reading that little bit about you, why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Oh, my goodness. So, you know, and I love this whole thing about creativity. Just listening to your intro, I was like, oh my God, I can just feel the creative juices flowing. So for me, you know, if I go back, I think it kind of the start of really understanding, I think there's a piece in high school for people. If you aren't one of the jocks or if you're not one of the in crowd, I think there's an element of high school that kind of undermines your creative capabilities. And sometimes it's not until later on in life that you start to really uncover the gifts that you have. And for me, that was definitely the case. And so it wasn't until I got into my first corporate job. I started working at 13, but I got into my first corporate job and, you know, basically helped launch the first internet service provider in Canada. You want to talk about creative? Oh my God. Like, you know, we were literally on the bleeding edge of technology for years, like for many, many years. And I remember, you know, being in front of a classroom of people every Wednesday night doing this intro to the internet thing and saying, you know, trying to convince people that email would be a good idea someday. And they all thought we were crazy.
Oh my God.
Like, seriously. And in terms of, you know, just seeing the evolution of the internet and being intimately involved with that right from the start has just been the most incredible ride, you know, on the IT side of my life. And then, you know, of course, I have the spiritual side of my life. You know, at this point in time, I've integrated the two, but at that point in time, definitely, you know, they were two different parts of who I was. And on the spiritual side, you know, the creativity with regards to what I did in that space too is, you know, just, I mean, you know, like the reality is most people think I'm crazy half the time. That's the truth of it. Let's be real, right?
That's the beauty of it.
Right?
Oh my gosh. Well, we're going to have like an intense, fun-filled like conversation. I can just feel it already. But what you already just brought up, which I'm so interested in diving into more, when you mentioned about that element of high school, if you weren't part of the in crowd and how that kind of carries over in ways, I think that's a very interesting point, both that and the intro to the internet. I mean, yeah, here you were talking about these things where it's that when you're on that cusp of discovering something and putting these ideas out there and the societal norm, like people don't see it. They're like, what are you talking about? And it was that way when my dad was a banker and they were talking about, like, they didn't call it ATMs at the time, but it was an ATM. And people thought they were crazy that people would not use them. And it was an insane idea.
I love it. Right. It is. And if you even look back to, like, if anybody's like a Star Trek fan, right? Like,
yes.
The number of things you saw in Star Trek that are now, you know, just de rigueur, like it's just like every day, it's not even abnormal. And yet at the time that you would have watched it, it was like, whoa, you know, so totally out of anybody's mindset. Right. I remember, you know, back before I got into the internet business, I remember I used to waitress at this restaurant and these two guys would come in and they were competitors in the welding space or something. And they would come in with their cell phones that were like bricks.
Right, right.
Like these things were massive, right? They had antennas on them. I mean, like they were probably 12 inches tall. Like it was hilarious, right?
And you carried them in a bag. And it was like basically like a phone bag or what you would carry like equipment in. Like it was massive. Yeah. And when you mentioned the whole Star Trek thing, my husband talks about that all the time. He's like, yeah, beam me up. Like, he's like, we're doing that now. Like, isn't that amazing? He brings that up all the time.
Oh yeah. So. It's super cool. Super cool.
Okay, so let's start off with this would you rather question, and then we're going to take a full-on dive into all these questions and unearth more, dive deeper. So, okay, so Trish, would you rather be completely invisible for one day or be able to fly for one day?
Oh my gosh, I saw this question the other day, and I have to tell you, I was a little bit discombobulated.
Really?
Well, I was, because like there's so many benefits to both. You know, I'm very much, especially because I do so much work with energy, I'm very ethical. So I think I would go with flying, just because being invisible feels like it would just be like, what are you going to do with that other than just be sneaky?
It's true. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm just not. So, you know, I think, you know, while it would be cool, the reality is the only thing I'm doing is hiding. And frankly, that's just not me. So I think I would do the flying thing.
I love that word ethical. It's so true, because if you're invisible, you're being nothing but sneaky. You're just listening in on people's conversations and
right
and whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. So we're going with flying. Yeah. Which would be pretty cool. By the way, do you have flying dreams at all?
I have, not very often. I have falling dreams, probably more often than flying dreams. Yeah. But I do travel the astral plane. So there you go. A little bit of crazy woo-woo for you.
Good. Mm-hmm. But we're going to dive more into that. So yes. Okay. So Trish, let's dive in. So how do you define creativity?
Oh my goodness. You know, I've been thinking about this since we first talked a couple of weeks ago, and you know, to me, creativity is the ability to leverage all of my gifts in a way that creates magic, right? Mm-hmm. So if I think about, you know, in my IT life, right, I used to go and I used to do requirements gathering sessions, sometimes 5 to 7 days of just full on requirements gathering sessions, right? Long days, workshops, I'm facilitating, it's exhausting. And then I would go home and I would clean my house for like 3 days. Like literally, I'm not joking. Like I would just literally clean my house. And as I'm doing this and, you know, just listening to music and totally zoned out, all of that information from those 5 to 7 days is coalescing in my mind until it comes through with like clarity, right?
Yeah.
And when it does, then, you know, I used to say I was procrastinating, but then, you know, one day my mother said, no, you're processing. I'm like, oh, that's what I'm doing. So, but the thing is that it's even when I'm facilitating those sessions, right, the ability to hear what isn't being said, and the ability to, you know, see what isn't being shown and to kind of dig, like that is such a magical skill set. And it requires every one of my faculties and every one of my gifts to be on point. So in that space, I find it exceptionally creative because it like just lights up every one of my capabilities where I feel like I'm in full flow.
I love that. It's kind of like, I just saw like synapses just kind of like going like zing when it's like fireworks in the brain because they're kind of being ignited.
Yes. Yes. And that's exactly right. And you feel it, right? Like your whole body is like lit.
It's visceral.
I love that. So that to me is, I don't know if that's a definition, but that's for me, to me, what creativity is.
It definitely is. And I think it's important to note also the whole point about processing and where by cleaning and zoning, we, you know, the perceived zoning out, but that's really time where you are processing that information and kind of gelling it and kind of taking a breath for it then all to, it's like where the downloads come in.
Yep, totally. 100%. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So important. So, okay. So I want to welcome people here with us live. Thank you so much for being here. If you have any questions or comments, please put them into the chat box where we can see them and we will be able to answer. So let's do a little bit of a deeper dive into where you've come from and where you are. I did title this, talking to a person told she had 7 years to live. So if you could kind of, you have such an interesting background of being in this innovative space of the IT world where you were literally on the cutting edge of everything. If you could give us some of that journey up to where you are now a little deeper, that'd be great.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because, so I was diagnosed in 98. I'd just given birth to my daughter. It took them 3 years to diagnose me, actually. And I remember, you know, sitting on the hospital bed in this hospital room, meeting this rheumatologist I'd never met before. And she came in and she kind of said, you know, told me the diagnosis that I had scleroderma and that I had 7 years to live in her estimate and that she was going to put me on this, you know, aggressive round of methotrexate, et cetera, et cetera. And I am not joking. My intuition was so loud. I literally could not hear anything else. And my intuition said, no, mm-hmm. no. And so I refused all medications. And you know, I mean, she's like, but you can't do that. And I'm like, yeah, I can. Yeah, actually I can. And she said, but I can't treat you if you won't take the medication. I'm like, that's okay. I'm good. So I left. And I think a big part of this too is important to note is that there's two things in this. Number one, I think if it had been cancer everybody knows what that is, I might've been a little bit more scared, but I had no idea what scleroderma was. Like it's such a rare condition, right?
Yes. Tell us what it is.
Well, I don't know, lots of people have different definitions of what it is, but in a nutshell, it is in essence creates scar tissue inside the body until the organs cease to function. Mm-hmm. That's what it does. So for me at the time, my face was, they call it stone face disease also. My face was very tight, my hands all the way up to my shoulders. The skin was very tight, like you couldn't pinch the skin. Right. You couldn't grab a hold of the skin. It was just so tight, just from scar tissue. So, that's where I was, 24-hour heartburn. If I got down on one knee, I couldn't get back up just from the pain of the arthritis component of it. But the other thing that I did at that time is I never ever took ownership of the disease. So I always say I was diagnosed with, I never said I have. Right. So I never, ever took ownership of it. And so what this meant was like, you know, even though I was on the bleeding edge of technology at the time, I can tell you back in 98, you did not have access to the kind of natural health information that you do today. Right. So, you know, I was literally going to the local health food store. I lived in Halifax, Nova Scotia at the time, looking at bulletin boards, trying to find natural healers. And I did. And, you know, and there was, I would try something and you know, it either would work or I would feel better or it wouldn't. And, you know, I would say pretty much there isn't much I haven't tried over the course of that journey. Some of it was food, some of it was, you know, exercise. I think a huge component of it was spiritual. You know, I do believe that we can set ourselves up physically for dis-ease by not eating the right foods. You know, mine was addiction to adrenaline, by, you know, not exercising and mistreating our body. However, I think how we manifest that condition is really driven by where you are emotionally and spiritually. And for me, I had a very closed heart at the time due to all kinds of childhood trauma stuff. So, you know, so for me, you know, acknowledging and learning all of these things and discovering all these things about myself, stepping into forgiveness, stepping into surrender, you know, and there's so much of it. Like, I mean, that happened in 98. I've been on this journey a very long time. And it's not like that was my first taste of spiritual work. I've been doing it since I was a kid, right? Like I didn't grow up as an adult and all of a sudden discover this. I've been using energy tools since I was a child. Yeah. So it was like, you know, to go through all of these processes. And to this day, I still go through those processes, right? Yeah. To this day, I still find myself in a position of having to forgive and, you know, all of these other kinds of things. So I don't know if the journey ever really ends. If I had to look back on it and say, what were the big drivers? It was that I created a life for myself where if I was tired, I could sleep. You know, I worked from home. It was based on deliverables, not based on hours, you know, of the day kind of thing, very similar to where we find ourselves now in, you know, after COVID and people understanding more about that kind of work ethic. So I would sleep when I needed to. Yoga was huge. Like just through doing yoga and diet, I was able to get off. I was close to 10 Advil a day for the pain. And then I took none. So, and also regress the disease. So, you know, my hands are totally mobile now. My face is, you know, back to normal, like, you know, all of those kinds of things. But it really was a function of educating myself. It was also a function of, you know, being very careful about the kind of energy that I exposed myself to. So for example, there were a number of, you know, support groups for scleroderma at that time. I haven't looked into them again since, so I can't speak to them now. But at that time, you know, they were exceptionally negative towards the fact that I wasn't on some kind of a medical program and therefore, you know, really didn't want me to be part of the group because they didn't want me saying anything about what I was doing to other people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So here you're having these positive effects, but there's still this societal thinking that you should be on medication because that's how you treat it.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. And I would say for some people that is the case, you know, like the reality is, you know, my husband and I did a lot of work in this space. You know, I did more of the spiritual energy work. He became a holistic nutritionist and he worked with people on the diet side. And what I would say is if we worked with, you know, maybe 100 people, there was only one who was willing to go the distance and do the work.
Yeah.
Like the reality is people don't want to do the work. So, you know, I was one of the few who was willing to do the work because my driver was simple. I just gave birth to my daughter. Like, and I already had a son and my husband, like there was no way I was leaving. Like I had to face my fear of death through that process, but I was not leaving without a fight. And so I did everything in my power to stay, you know, but it is true that choosing to live is the harder path.
Mm. So it's truly a, there's a strong belief system.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, to me, it was just a commitment.
Commitment.
Yeah. Right. I don't know if it was a belief because my beliefs changed like every time I did a new process, my beliefs changed. Right. Yeah. You know, so those beliefs are being blown up, you know, on a constant basis. So I don't think it was so much a belief system. It was just commitment. And I just remember like, to me, when I sat on that hospital bed and I got that diagnosis, my body just locked in and said, no. Mm-hmm. And I trusted that because I've trusted my intuition since I was a kid. So I didn't even question it. And then I knew that I had to take personal responsibility for that decision. Like I couldn't just go home and wait to die. Right. Like, you know, right. I'm not taking your drugs, but I'm going to go home and wait to die. Right. I knew I had to do everything in my power to, you know, to live. And it was constantly looking for someone who might have an answer. I did everything, astrology readings, past life regressions. I mean, you name it, I've tried it. Like there are very few things, and that includes things in my body, on my body, like you name it. Right? Mm-hmm. So, but the reality is I am here. So something worked along the way, right?
Exactly.
Whatever that was.
Yeah. So I want to talk to you more about what shamanism is and this kind of stuff. But first I want to ask you, you mentioned your intuition, you've been doing this since you're a kid, like your intuition, like yelled at you and you knew because you trusted it. So mm-hmm. What were you doing when you were a kid that you were that in tune?
Well, I think that, you know, so I grew up in quite a verbally abusive household and, you know, I think that when people grow up in an environment like that, they do hone that sixth sense, right? Because you're always cautious and you're always really hyper aware of the energy around you, the energy of people, where things are good. You know, you don't want to find yourself in those situations. You learn to read people very well. And that's not the only way that people can have that gift by any stretch of the imagination. But in my experience, I notice more and more that people that I talk to that have really well-honed intuitive capabilities often came from abusive childhoods. So for me, you know, I was, do you want me to tell you a funny story about how I learned this is a funny story. So I was probably, I don't know, 15 years old. Okay. And I was, and I trusted my intuition up till that point, but this was the time that it was like a big reminder to say, hello. So I was 15 years old. For weeks, I'd been sneaking out at night, sneaking out of my house and going to see my boyfriend. And so this one night, like, and at that point in time, this is another one you'll think is funny for those people who can relate to my age. I had a phone in my room, like a telephone, like an actual hardline phone, right?
Yes. Attached to the wall.
Right. Plugged into the wall and everything. And so I had gotten out of my room. I was halfway down the hall and my freaking phone rang. So I had to go back and unplug it because usually I would unplug it, but I'd forgotten, right? So hello, indicator number one. I started to go down the stairs and I go to leave the house and I go to open, you know, the sliding back door and it won't open. And I'm like, what's going on here? My dad had bought some new fangled thing to, you know, keep people from being able to break into the house, right? But I didn't know what it was. And so, you know, I'm mucking around with that. I'm making noise. I'm like, oh my God. And I just have this gut feeling, right? Anyway, I go outside. Sure enough, the freaking dog next door starts barking, you know, and I'm like, oh my God. Anyway, but I go, right? I go. But my intuition was like, big red sign, big red sign, big red sign, big red sign, right? Plus my stomach felt gross. So what happens? I'm coming back and all the lights in my house are on.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, yeah. The water heater blew. So of course my parents get up and they're like looking for everybody to come help clean up the mess.
Oh my God.
No Trish.
Oh my God. So what happened to Trish?
Oh yeah. Well, let's just say that wasn't a happy night. But yeah, so that was a huge reminder to trust my intuition. Like, so not only did I have that feeling in my gut, but it was just like, the universe was doing everything it could to tell me, do not leave tonight. Do not go out tonight. And I just ignored it, right? So ever since that day, I never ignore my intuition. I literally live by it, even in work. 90% of my day is driven by intuitive information.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. We know. It's like the higher self, these signals, and we choose to ignore them so often.
Yeah.
And doesn't serve. Well, thank you for sharing that. So shaman, I would just like you to tell people, you know, maybe clear up like what a shaman is. If somebody's not familiar, they might think of, you know, just a medicine man, like, you know, no teeth kind of thing.
Yeah, I have teeth. Yeah. So, you know, it's very interesting. So for me, again, I've used energy tools since I was a child. I've traveled the astral plane since I was a kid, you know, and the thing is that I'm also quite a nonconformist, right? So for me to go into certain practices, like, you know, for me, Reiki felt too structured, you know, these different energy practices just did not resonate with me because they just felt too structured. So, shamanism really appealed to me because it felt much more like a framework. And not only does it welcome, but it encourages you to work within it with the tools you already have at your disposal, right? So it's not like it's a prescriptive approach. It's very much a framework. And so where I learned shamanism, and there's many forms, so it's not like every shaman is the same. So I think that that's important to know. But in essence, they are and they're not, because in essence, what it is to walk between worlds. Right? To be able to walk between worlds and also to walk with no shadow. So the aspect of walking with no shadow is that you've done your internal work. You always will, and you will continue to, but you strive to do your internal work. So you're not projecting onto others, right? You're not needing them to be your mirror to help you to see what you are not owning about yourself. So it's a constant process of really learning who you are and owning all aspects of who you are, such that you can stand in the center and hold space for others through the healing and energy journey. Now, for me personally, I learned through a Caucasian couple out of Alberta, and they had trained for 20 years with the Blackfoot tribe. And the purpose of them learning those teachings was to take it outside of the indigenous people, because they were concerned about losing the knowledge. Right. So this was specifically their mandate. It was a beautiful training process. I absolutely loved it. And I love doing that work. Like, that work is another one of those areas of, you know, creativity that totally lights me up. And when I can work with people to help them to stand into their 10 of who they really are, you know, there's really no greater gift.
Tell us what this stand in the 10 of what you really are. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So your 10 is the full potential of your capability, right? And the reality is that we are all infinitely powerful. Most people are like, yeah, okay, whatever. but we are, we truly are. That being said, you know, if we go back to that idea at the beginning of the conversation around creativity and being completely lit and all of your gifts being brought to the fore, when you're in that space, that is your 10. That is your 10, right? You are in full flow. You are shining your light at its full brightness. You know, there is nothing that is holding you back from standing in the full, amazing, beautiful power of what you and who you are here to be. That's your 10.
Yeah. And I would love to hear from people like who are listening. Do you feel that? It's like the goal is to be feeling that more often than not, because we're human. We go through waves of things, but when we own our talents, when we own wanting to explore more and be more expressive, to then be more expansive, it feels so incredible. It's like this feeling that is just like, you are just like a Christmas tree. You're so lit up.
100%. And not only that, but it has that ripple effect always, right?
Yes.
Like, don't get me wrong, I can dance in my living room and be completely lit all by myself. Like, but that being said, when I do that, there's the ripple effect of I'm probably going to be in a good mood for the rest of the day, and other people are going to benefit from that, right? So no matter what that is, you're generally, there's a ripple effect of you standing in that power, because when you're in that space, you know, you are either an energizer bunny for other people, or you are grounded and calm for other people. You're a foundation. Like, however your gifts show up and whoever, you know, you are in those gifts, there is a ripple effect where it impacts the people around you in a positive way.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for saying that. And the person that just said their comment, Molly or LSD, the goal is not to be using that. It's natural.
Oh yeah, I don't use anything. Yeah, and people will even ask me as a shaman, do I do ayahuasca or anything like that? I don't. I get such a high from, you know, from being connected naturally to my gifts and to my power. Like, I would never. I actually, and there's nothing wrong with it. I want to be really clear about that. This is my choice and my, you know, how I do it. But, you know, because I know there are people who will practice, you know, they've had a glass of wine or, you know, they do ayahuasca or any or whatever, right? Fair enough. I don't, right? For me, I want my body to be pure and clean when I step into that space. So I don't do any form of, you know, enhancement drugs or anything along those lines.
Right. Yeah. It's a personal choice.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So before we move on to the second question, tell us about the book that you put out. Because I think this is so much about what you're a part of with really coming from your heart, the journey into the heart.
Yeah, absolutely. So the book is interesting because I had no intention of writing a book, even though I have written another book actually, but I really had no intention of writing a book. And so it's a kind of a funny story. I was living in Vancouver Island at the time, and I was downstairs in my basement, and I was reading this book about marketing or something. And you know, there's this one chapter, I think it was Joe Vitale or something like that. But anyway, he was talking about this woman who had written a book called Everything Men Know About Women. And I was thinking to myself, oh, this should be interesting. And anyway, so I read on and come to find out the woman's book is like completely empty. Like there's literally no words on any pages. And she's sold like hundreds of thousands of these things, right? And I'm like, I did exactly what you're doing, Hollis. I'm like laughing hysterically thinking this is just like the funniest thing ever. And anyway, I am literally laughing out loud, and all of a sudden, boom, this whole concept for this book downloads into my brain. And the messages right off the back was, the book is called The Question Journey. People need to stop looking outside of themselves for their answers. It needs to be black and white, which I'll explain in a minute. And there, you know, what was the other piece of it? Oh, and it needs to be collaborative. That was what I downloaded literally as I'm sitting there. I go upstairs and I said to my husband, oh my gosh, I just got this idea. It's going to be a book of powerful questions. And he's like, wow, that sounds really cool actually. And literally 9 months to the day, I had the, you know, the release party.
So you birthed it literally.
I did. I literally birthed it. And it was like birthing a baby because you're like scared and you have no idea what's going to happen next. And it's like, you have to go through your own, you know, emotional drama. And it's like, it truly was like birthing a child. It really, really was. But yeah, so it was collaborative. The book itself is a book of powerful questions. So you don't really read it. There's only like literally the first 8 pages that kind of describe the process and that type of thing, which is, you know, you can read it or not. It's up to you. But, you know, I downloaded that night. So I literally have sticky notes all over my wall that I was writing in the dark. Mm. All of that was downloaded like in the middle of the night. So within 24 hours, the entire book was written, with the exception of the questions and the artwork and all the collaboration capabilities, you know, that are in there. So yeah, so that was, and it is like the powerful questions. You know, one funny one that I always like to share is somebody had come to me with one about, you know, do you feel worthy? Right. And I'm like, oh my God, I can totally see somebody, you know, really struggling with that. Yeah, right? It wasn't 2 weeks later I got that 2x4 upside the head. Right?
It's so true. It's like, yeah, the 2x4. It's like, yeah. Are you paying attention?
Exactly.
Anyway. Are you listening? What I really enjoyed about when you shared it with me is that it's very fluid. It's very flowing. And even with each page, I love how you have the words like written in all different ways. So some are like on a diagonal, some are like curvy, the sentences. It's just very, it's very flowing.
Yes. Very creative.
It really is.
And you know what? The funny thing is, because of course, you know, being an IT, I certainly have my OCD moments, right? But you'll notice that it also has no page numbers, which is by design, right? Because that will just drive the OCD people crazy. Like there's a bunch of things I did in there that literally would drive somebody who's got OCD just around the bend, right? And I know because I was, right? So, you know, because this is the thing that you need to step out of if you're really going to entertain these questions. You can't entertain it from a place of trying to control your world, right?
Yeah.
You have to step outside of that control, and you have to really get quiet, and you really have to allow the question to, you know, seep into your bones and into your cells and allow whatever has to come forward from that to come up and just give it the process and honor it. You know, so it really is a powerful book. It's a healing book, you know, because there's a lot of trauma that we push down and we just keep inside of our bodies. And just the entertaining of a question, many people avoid these questions because they know that just allowing themselves to ask it forces them to think about the answer.
Yeah.
Right?
It's that whole expression repression.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you going to express it or are you going to repress it? And yep. The repressing it is where all that bad stuff, icky stuff happens.
And the body can only tolerate that kind of trauma for so long. Like if you just keep pushing it down, pushing it down, pushing it down, something will manifest, right? So you have to let it go.
What's pretty amazing is a very good friend of mine. She has had so much trauma in her life, and she has had a lot of health issues as she's gotten older, and just two things that she realized. One beautiful thing, one amazing thing is that her body actually created a shunt that that saved her life. Like that, wow. When the doctors, she had multiple surgeries over the years, and multiple doctors not knowing. And anyway, her body created a shunt.
That's amazing. I'm not surprised, though. I'm not surprised. The body is a miraculous thing, and we are not even close to being able to understand the power of it.
It's like, oh my God, exactly. It's that. And what she's really realized is so much of the trauma that she's had, there's other issues that she's having going on now, but it's like she's realized that she can't be mad at her body for certain things because her body's been through so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's, like you said in the beginning, the forgiveness aspect. It's so much forgiveness and so much understanding, which then is so healing.
Well, and it's to, you know, for that exact example, you know, every time you forgive someone else, you forgive yourself. That's part of the process, right? Mm. And there's many things you need to forgive yourself for, even if there's not somebody else. It's part of the forgiveness process, right? Because we're so hard on ourselves. It's ridiculous.
Yes.
So, you know, we really do need to learn to be kinder to ourselves, you know, to understand we did the best we could with what we knew at the time. You know, it's an allowing, it's a kindness to yourself. And we struggle with that. I mean, one of the biggest things that I struggled with, and I had to do it through that journey of healing for me, was that I had to put myself first.
Yeah.
Right? I had two young kids, but I had to put myself first because if I didn't, I was not going to be there for them.
Right. Right. Which is seen as selfishness and all this kind of stuff, but it's not because, yeah.
I heard that selfish is the new sexy.
There we go. There's your quote. I always pick a quote. Selfish is the new sexy.
That's okay. Not mine, by the way. I don't know whose it is, but I've heard it along the way. So I can't take credit for the quote, but yeah, selfish is the new sexy.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's move on to question number two. And again, I'm going to welcome the people here live. Thank you so much.
Hi, everyone.
So happy that you're here. Please put any questions or comments into the chat box and we can see them. So how, Trish, do you incorporate more creativity into your own life?
I really try to, you know, I do the things I love to do and I've created my life in such a way that I can. Like, so when I'm at work, you know, with my corporate job, I'm creative in that because my team is structured in such a way that we leverage everyone's gifts. So, you know, I don't end up doing a lot of the things that I don't enjoy doing. I end up doing the things that I do enjoy doing. And when I'm home, you know, I can choose to either relax and do nothing, or I can choose to, you know, like I did most of the day today, I created a course. So, you know, I love that. That's a super creative process for me. So, you know, I try to always love what I do. I don't, you know, if I'm in a job that where I'm at, that I don't enjoy, I move on.
Can you please, explain to people within a corporate setting, more about the creative aspect and what you perceive as it and how you create your teams? And because I think this is so important to be able to, because so often when I'm talking to people and immediately they're, you know, when you say what you're doing, your niceties, and I say, I'm an art teacher, da, 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 and they say, I can't draw or paint. I don't have a creative bone in my body. So, but then when you talk about imagination and visualization and taking an idea and actually bringing it into life and using interpersonal skills and all of this, they're like, oh, I never thought of it that way. Mm-hmm. So I would love to hear from you, who's actually in that world, more about your thoughts on it.
Yeah. And I mean, first and foremost, my leadership philosophy, and I am a leader. I've always been a leader, you know, in my corporate world. That was one of the things that, you know, when I got out of high school and I got in the real world, I realized that was my gift. As a leader, my philosophy, since early in my career has been a quote by Dennis Waitley, which is true power comes from empowering others. And in order to do that, I need to understand what they bring to the table. I need to understand what our objectives are, and I need to match and marry the gifts with the objectives. And that is such an amazing process. So the first thing that I'm doing from a creative perspective is I'm constantly looking for ways to help people step into their 10, right? So I don't operate where they're at. I operate where I see them being capable of being. Mm-hmm. So I treat them as if they are operating at their 10, and they just keep stepping up and stepping up and stepping up, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not a forced activity. It's just that I see the 10 in them and I treat them that way. And they, every single time, will step up and come closer and closer to that 10. The next thing that I'm doing is, you know, I'm always, like I said, 90% of my day in corporate is intuitive, right? So I'm always scanning the environment in terms of, you know, which projects are on track and which projects are potentially, you know, having issues, and, you know, where is the energy stagnant? Where is the energy in good flow? And I'm tracking that energy for things like tasks and projects and even emails all the time, which is another creative process, because I'm totally tuning that, you know, that gift all the time. Then what I'm doing is, as I said, I'm marrying those gifts from all of my team members with what we have to achieve, and putting people where they're best suited to contribute to those outcomes, right? So it really, I the only way that I can liken it, and I've never been a maestro, but it's like being a maestro, right? Yeah. Where you have all of these different people who play all of these different instruments, and each of those instruments may be beautiful in and of themselves. However, it's the bringing them together that creates the magic, right? So I'm a conductor of magic at work all the time.
You are. Oh my God. And as you were just explaining all of that, I was just smiling, because it's like, first of all, you are looking for them to achieve. So that specifically, you're not telling them they suck. You're not like focusing on these kind of aspects. You're bringing them up. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of other things that are in the mix, but just talking in general, you're looking as a person as you see them, and they will rise to the occasion on that. And all of this conductor of the magic, there are so many things. I mean, here you are in this corporate world, but then this energy stuff, having that balance, oh my gosh, what an incredible mix, because you can feel the energy, you can feel the stuckness, you can feel the flow, you can read people. Oh my gosh, they're so lucky to have you.
And I'm lucky to have them, like, truly, because it's like, you know, I do, that lights me up. And if I didn't have the gift of being able to have that team, I wouldn't be able to use that gift, right? So it is it's a two-way exchange. It's total reciprocity.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the collaboration.
Yeah.
Oh, so tell us more about things that you enjoy doing, like creative wise. Do you like cooking? Do you like exercising? Do you like jumping out of airplanes? Do you like, what are some more things that you enjoy?
God, no. No, I'm definitely, you know, I would say that the big learn for me is that, you know, and this goes back to that whole high school thing, right? Is that the physical is not my milieu, right? Like, you know, don't get me wrong, I played ball and, you know, volleyball and all that crap when I was a kid, whatever. But it's just, that's not where I excel. Where I excel is in business. And, you know, and that's where I can bring all of my gifts to bear, which is fantastic. So in terms of being creative, you know, I love to write, you know, so I do write, whether it's, you know, blogs or posts or whatever. I'm very cerebral, right? So I'm very much, even though you can call it energetic, it doesn't matter, right brain, left brain, I actually sit right in the middle, you know, so I'm pulling from both sides all the time. And I love to marry that energetic piece to the practical and tactical, like that's another gift where it's like, okay, well, I can talk, you know, etheric all day long. The reality is I can show you how to make that practical and tactical and use it every single day in your life. The way I use that at my work, our KPIs, we hit or exceed them every single quarter. Right. Mm-hmm. And I know it's because I can track the energy and I keep things in flow. So, you know, because I can feel it and I can sense when it's happening. So that creative piece, but in terms of other creative, like I love creating courses and content. I love speaking. I love doing things like this with you, and others who just, you know, can facilitate great conversation and allow us to share this information with other people. That to me is my creative outlet. I just like to, you know, I like to connect. I like to share my knowledge. I'm at the point in my life where I wanted to be able to share my knowledge with other people.
But I also like to learn from other people. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's probably much more cerebral for me. I mean, I enjoy yoga. I do biking with my husband. We like to golf. We walk every day. You know, those are some things that I enjoy doing. But in terms of the creative piece for me, I also like coloring books. Like, I know that that's a big thing that's come back, but I do enjoy that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. I created a coloring book called The Perfectly Imperfect Coloring Book. And I didn't think of it. And it's funny because there's like a snobbiness, I guess, that I kind of, you know, going to art school and whatever. I went for ceramics, but didn't so much see myself as a drawer, even in going to art school. But somebody mentioned, they were like, you should create a coloring book. And I was like, why would I do that? why would I go and do that? I have no interest. I never liked it. You have to stay in the lines. You have to do all this stuff. And then I was like, wait a minute, Hollis. I created with, you know, there's a lot of inspirational words. And in it, I put how to create. There's a teaching component in there with blank pages on to create their own pages, and then do bubble letters and Zentangles and stuff like that. So I was glad that someone mentioned it to me, but it's just so funny. I mentioned it because it's like your stuff just comes up automatically. Like, why would I do that? And then I'm so happy that I did.
I love it. That's awesome. You got the proverbial 2x4 too.
Exactly.
I love it.
Exactly. So am I right? Did you and your husband, did you create some kind of, are you doing something together with health and healing? I could be wrong on this, but I thought I saw something.
We did. Yeah, we did when we lived on Vancouver Island. We haven't done it for a number of years now. I'm stepping back into doing more of the shamanic energy work, including with corporate, right? So teaching leaders how to use energy tools. So to really trust that intuitive information that they're getting, but to also create momentum and traction by creating positive energy within their team. So I'm stepping more into that space. My husband always loves to help people with the diet thing, but he's only really interested in working with people who want to do the work. So, yeah. So you can't run a business that way.
Right.
Just saying. So yeah, he's got a job, which he absolutely loves. So, you know, he only does that on the side. If people reach out to him and they're willing to do the work, he'll spend the time with them and help them out on the holistic nutrition side. Yeah.
So basically, I just got a vision of like somebody having open heart surgery, and then when they are healed, they have a cigarette. Like,
well, and this is the, like, so here's the, this is the interesting thing. It was 2013, and he had a massive heart attack. Paul did. And like a widowmaker, like he should not have lived.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And not 2 weeks after that, he ended up with having a stroke and a pulmonary embolism.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was insane. He lost his ability to speak. He had pain with the pulmonary embolism, but he couldn't communicate. So all he was telling me, we're pretty telepathic. I know it sounds ridiculous, but I understand everything that he's saying. Like even the woman that was there to try to teach him his speech was like, oh my God, you understand like everything he's saying. Like, yeah, I know. Wow. I don't know. We've been together like 30 years. So, but yeah, so like it was fascinating, Hollis, because it was like a doctor would hold up a pen and say, do you know what this is? And he'd look at me and go, nope. Like he just shrug. And then he would log onto his iPad, log onto the banking and pay the bills and never make a mistake.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
It was crazy. Anyway, you've put me off onto that heart attack thing, but oh, so where I was going with that heart attack thing was the doctors were all like, oh, you're going to have to be on, you know, this drug and blah, 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 and the statin and all this kind of gobbledygook. And he's like, no. So he went 100% plant-based. Obviously they were tracking his cholesterol and stuff like that. And they, when he, his cholesterol dropped so significantly, they were like, what did you do? And he told them, and they were like, they don't want to treat him if he's not taking the drugs kind of thing. Right. But whatever. So he's primarily a plant-based diet but you're absolutely right. The one has a heart attack and goes out and has a smoke or whatever. Like, and this is, you're exactly right. Like, are you willing to do the work or not? Right.
Are you going to do the work? So, oh my gosh. So in hearing that story, so question, how long did it take him to recover from all of this?
About a year. You know, he literally had to teach himself how to talk again using like kids apps on an iPad.
He had to learn how to write again. Numbers were fine. Like I said, he was paying the bills, no problem. And even aware of the date. I don't like when bills were due, it was crazy. It was as much as it was horrifying what was happening at the time, it was absolutely fascinating to see how the brain works. Right.
Right.
So about a year, I would say, by the time he was, back to feeling, more confident and things of that nature. It's pretty scary for anyone who's lived through that. But I would say a solid 2 years before he was like back to himself. It took me longer to recover as the caretaker than it took him.
I'm sure. I mean, because your kids were at this point, they weren't teenagers yet, or were they?
Yeah. Oh no, they were. My son was already grown and moved out, and our daughter was I don't know, probably 14, 15, somewhere around there. She couldn't handle the stress. Like she ended up with IBS as a result of the stress. So we actually shipped her back to Nova Scotia to live with her grandmother for a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Between the two of you, man, the pact that you guys made before you came down.
Right. Seriously. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Amazing though. Yeah. But I couldn't, but honestly, like, there was a part there, there was a piece there when he was laying on the side of the road and an EMT nurse or an ICU nurse and her son who had just finished his EMT training did chest compressions for 20 minutes until the ambulance got there. And, I was so mad at Paul because he broke my trust. Like he left me and I was pissed, like mad. Like, I mean, I was scared. I was in shock and the whole nine yards, but it took me a long time to get to build that trust back. However, watching him show up every single day, going to do his walking and going to the, doing all the things he needed to do, that man's a warrior. Like I had massive respect for him and actually fell in love with him in an entirely different way, watching him go through that process. Like it was amazing.
Oh my gosh. That's so beautiful.
It was awesome.
It really is. I mean, because I guess there's the victim mentality or the growth mentality. Cause people could be like, oh my gosh, you know what happened to me? My husband almost died and oh my God, there was so much healing that had to go on and he had to do this. Like there's that negative vibration tone to it.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about it, I mean, this is way after the fact, but it's coming from a place of this journey and at the core of it, love.
Mm-hmm. It was incredible. Like I would never wish it on anyone ever. Like honest to God, I would never wish it on anyone ever. I would never want to have to go through that again. But it does teach you so much about who you are and the person you're with and who they are, and how you choose to show up every day. Like every single day that guy got up and got a shower. And sometimes that might be all he did, but he got that shower every day. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, and he would every day he could go to the, they had this walking thing that you could go to and they strap you up to the, so they can monitor your heart and everything else every single day. Like every day he did everything that he needed to do in order to pull himself out and push forward and heal from that process. And it was an amazing thing to watch.
Wow. Just taking all that in. So as we're getting to the top of the hour, before we get to the third question, I just kind of want to bring up what you kind of skirted over of where you're going into at this point, which is the shamanic work with corporate leaders.
Yeah. And, yeah.
Oh my gosh. How friggin' powerful is that?
Right. Here's what I will tell you, Hollis. They're not all lined up at my door by breaking it down yet.
heal me, help me be a better.
Right. I say, I want to work with the leaders who understand, like if I say that my mission is to heal our corporate work environments one leader at a time, in essence, the leader looks at that and goes, well, I don't need to be healed.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. I'm looking for the leader who actually cares more about their team than they do about themselves. Right. And are okay with being uncomfortable with realizing that they may not be the leader they think they are and that they may have some room to learn and grow and to be a better leader for their team. And here's the crazy thing. I go back to that quote. And the thing is that I share this quote with every leader who works like on my team, right? So I have managers that work with me or whatever. And, the team I'm with now, I've been with them for like 3 years or whatever. And that quote, true power comes from empowering others. And there's so many layers to what that means. Yeah. As you uncover it day to day to day to day to day, it's like, oh wow, okay, I get it. You know, and it's like it's not until you're living and breathing it and being that leader that mm-hmm. you realize, you know, people come to me as the problem solver in our organization over and over and over again. Not because they look at me specifically, they look at the success of the team as a whole. Mm-hmm. Right. And so because the team is successful and you know what, I take the bullets when they're being fired, when there's kudos, those go to my team. They don't come to me. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's we, not me, but the power that I feel, which is not a power that is over people, but just in being empowered by the being the person who has the role that allows me to facilitate them becoming their 10 and them being empowered. Like mm-hmm. there's just this cycle that is so powerful and you don't really understand it until you're in it. And when you're in it, you start to realize, holy crap, like my career skyrockets everywhere I go.
Yeah.
And it's not because I'm standing there taking all the kudos going, wow, look at me. Yeah. Look at how good I am. Look what I did.
Yeah.
Right? It's yeah. because I can stand with a team and we deliver every single time. Yeah. And they also know that I lead that team. Right. So you know what I mean? Like there's just this beautiful balance of yes, I am empowered and get power from that process because it lights me up. They are empowered and they get power from that process. Like it is it's a beautiful cycle.
I'm like sitting here. I just need to take a deep breath each time after you talk because it's just like so freaking exciting. It's just if each person thought this way, it's literally creating this space that it's just lifting people up instead of bringing people down to make them feel bad about themselves and not worthy and focusing on the mistakes and all of that. It's empowerment. It's beautiful.
Well, you know, there's a quick, can I give you a quick one before we get, we got 4 minutes. Can I give you a quick one?
Well, and we still have one more question to wrap it up.
Oh, no, so, you yeah. go to your question. Go to your question.
No, I want to hear. Go ahead.
Well, you know what? This super, super quick is when you source from the negative, it's like a gas tank you have to fill up constantly. And you fill that up by taking from others. You need fuel to put in the tank and you need it from other people because you don't have it. When you source from the positive, it's like solar energy. It is infinite. Mm-hmm. You never need to refuel. It is just there.
God, yes. Whew. Okay. So that's almost like the word of advice that I would, anyway. Okay. So third question, a little repetitive, but just wrapping it up and putting a little bow on it. So why is creativity important?
I think that it's really important for people to know what their gifts are. And I think that creativity is an avenue to discovering that. So the more that you play with things and the more that you try things, the more likely you are to discover what your gifts are. And when you're ready to really stand in the power of that, then, you know, you feel complete within yourself because you trust those gifts, you know those gifts, and you can just stand there in the energy of that and allow that to shine out into the world. So I think it's important because it's important to discover who you are. And creativity in any mechanism is a way for you to do that.
Can you please tell them how they can find you?
Absolutely. Yep. You can go to thequestionjourney.com. That's where you can get access to copies of the book. I'm also on Instagram, Question Journey, and Facebook at The Question Journey. And I would love to meet you. So by all means, come along and let me know you're on Hollis's show.
There we go. Yes, yes, yes. So any quick final words of wisdom from Miss Trish Bishop?
You know what? I would just say, you know, I was thinking about this the other day and I actually did a post on it. We're in a really weird time in our lives right now. And as we're talking about creativity and how you choose to show up and being in the positive, as I was walking around the other day, there were monuments everywhere. And I'm looking at these monuments and they're all reminders to us of how not to treat each other, right? They're monuments of events in the past where we've done horrific things to each other as human beings. And we have a choice right now. We're in a very divisive time.
And we have a choice in how we show up in that. So I guess the last words that I would leave is for us to all be conscious of, could we just be kind? Could we be curious? Could we be open? Could we not create divisiveness by being staunchly in one camp or another, whatever camp that is, and just allow yourself to be in the space of wanting to choose that 100 years from now, there won't be a monument to how we treated each other during COVID, but there may be lessons that are taught in schools of how we showed up to support each other in humanity.
Well, that's the most perfect way to end. That would Yay! Be a beautiful world. Oh my God, Trish, thank you so much for taking this hour to chat. I mean, you're just inspiring, crazy inspiring.
Oh, this is so much fun. And thank you so much for those of you who've listened in. Love it.
So, so grateful. So thank you everybody who is joining us live, those catching the replay. This space is all about inspiring, sharing, and connecting and sharing stories. Like, this is what this is all about. We've always needed this, but we need it more than ever now to really lift each other up and listen to each other's perspectives. I have a multi-author book coming out this Friday called Creativity Is Whatever You Want It to Be, which is completely expanding the definition of what creativity is. And there is not one story in there about a pencil or a paintbrush. It is all about pivoting and trauma and just so many beautiful things. So reach out to me and I can tell you how to find that. And so many wonderful things. I wish you a good morning, a good afternoon, a good evening, wherever you are in this world, and be talking to you soon. So goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.